are great. Because I talked about ants last week, and I think I got no less than 500 different suggestions. Maybe not 500, but certainly 100. You guys were so good and faithful to let me know your secret recipes. The common denominator was borax, but some of you like borax and powdered sugar. Some of you like borax and regular sugar. Some of you swear by borax and syrup. And so, and then you know, igniting the house, which I've thought about doing a couple of different times. So I really appreciate all the fun suggestions that you gave me last week. And then the stories I've heard from you about your ant problems. Even somebody this morning who said, "We have not had an ant problem. I come to church last Sunday, and Thursday, you're not going to believe what I see climbing up my wall." So I'm so glad we could share that love with you. Wow, I didn't realize I would create such a, man, it is something. So, hey, we're going to continue in Proverbs. We have a couple more weeks in Proverbs. I'm excited about it because as we've worked through Proverbs of the summer, I hope you're finding that you're looking for and searching for wisdom. In the Bible, wisdom is not less than being moral and good. However, it's so much more. It's so much more than morality. It's about being in touch in such a way with reality so that we know the right thing to do, especially when rules don't apply. Like a lot of us like to follow the rules, right? And we want to know what's right, what's wrong, what's yes, what's no, what's the best thing to do. Wisdom is more than that. When there are no rules and you really could do whatever you want to do, wisdom is what kicks in. In other words, the vast majority of our decisions, and we get a lot of decisions to make, do we not? And most of the time, it's just a matter of, is this the good thing or the bad thing to do? No matter what our individual moral standards are, there will be a variety of moral options in every decision that we make. And so wisdom is the ability to know the right thing to do in situations when the moral standards or the moral rules don't apply to us. That's what wisdom is. And so today we're going to look at friendship. Solomon had a lot to say about friendship, and so I sat down and I thought, what are some songs about friendship? And I came up with four right off the top of my head. I probably could have come up with more, but if you ever watched Toy Story, then you know the song, "I've got a friend in you, and you've got a friend in me," right? If you grew up in Oklahoma like I did, then you know, "I got friends in low places where the whiskey grew." I know, church not appropriate, I understand, right? Or you got the "Lean on Me When You're Not Strong," right? Or if you grew up in the church in the 90s, then you know for sure that friends are friends forever when the Lord's the Lord of them, right? There are so many songs and movies and TV shows and books and all of these things about friends. As a matter of fact, one of the most popular sitcoms in American history is a show called Friends, right? And so Proverbs essentially tells us that we're not good, that we're not wise, and we don't live a wise life unless we have good friendships. And so Proverbs tells us that we won't make it in life. We won't survive in life. We won't be able to make the most of life unless we choose and develop these really good, great friendships. And I think Proverbs teaches us about how unique friendships really are. Friendships are hard. Did you know that? How many of you have friends? How many of you sometimes, with your hands raised, wish you didn't have friends? Right? Because friendships sometimes can be really difficult. They can be a challenge for us. And so I think what Proverbs does is it gives us the answer or an antidote of how unique friendships are. And so there's some practical advice that I think Solomon gives us about how to discover, how to find a friend. And once we are friends, that we need to nurture that friendship. We need to develop the friendship. We need to build on the friendship. And Proverbs, believe it or not, addresses all of these. There are two Proverbs that I think speak specifically to the uniqueness we should pay close attention to. Proverbs 18:24 says this, "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And I love this. A friend can be better than your sibling. How many of you have friends that are better than your brothers and sisters? Yes, right? How many of you might call a friend if you have a need before you would call your family? Right? Because this is the reality. This is what Solomon's saying. And so a friend can be better than a sibling. Family is everything, even more so in this particular culture than our culture. And Proverbs tells us that a good friend is better than a sibling. Why? Well, we go to Proverbs 17:17. It says this, "A friend loves at all times." At all times. "And a brother is born for adversity." In other words, the people we are related to are going to be there because they have to be there, because they were born into the adversity. They will show up. They will be loyal. They will be there when you need them the most, but they are not like us. They may not want to hang out with us. They may not want to be around us, but they'll show up to the birthday party that you invite them to. A friend, on the other hand, is someone who has chosen us. In verse 18:24, we read the word sticks. Sticks, which literally means to cleave. It's this Hebrew word for cleave. It refers to the commitment out of this passionate care, this passionate love, this passionate desire. A friend is better in a lot of ways than a sibling is because they've chosen us. They've picked us. And so I think friendship brings something unique into our lives. Family can't bring what friendship can bring into our lives. Romance can't bring it into our lives. Our neighbors can't bring what friendship can bring into our lives. Nothing else like friendship can come into our lives that's like friendship. And this is important because we usually put friendships on the back burner. Did you know this? We do. We usually put our romantic and our sexual love as most important, then our family, but then we have our work relationships, our civic relationships, the relationships that we have so that we can survive and make it in this world and kind of find success in this world. And then we might put neighbors in there because we need power, but friendship is not a biological or a sociological necessity. Friendship is deliberate. It's intentional. Friendship won't push itself on us. It's something that we need to desire. I first really began to grasp this when I read C.S. Lewis's book, The Four Loves, and I think it describes it perfectly because he essentially says, if it wasn't for erotic love, we wouldn't exist. Think about that. If it wasn't for family life, we wouldn't have been reared. If it's not for neighbor love, we couldn't survive the bad things that we're susceptible to. Therefore, in a busy culture like ours, where we work long hours, we travel, we are consumed with other relationships that require so much out of us, friendships that take a deliberate amount of intentional time, they get squeezed out. And I find this to be true. There are a lot of Christians I know, particularly, who don't know how to have friends. They don't have friends. And I think it's one of the saddest things because I think if we as believers can't live in community with friends, how are we going to model this necessity to the world? And so the book of Proverbs tells us we won't make life, we won't make the most out of life if we don't have friends. Proverbs was written in this family-oriented, this traditional culture, and tells us that friends are actually better than siblings. Proverbs remind us that fools perish either for the lack of friendship or because of bad friendships. So I think the question is, how do we find good friends? How do we find them? Again, Proverbs 18:24, if I read it again, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. See, this is not a contrast between two equal groups of people. We have companions and acquaintances and co-workers, and we have teammates and we have neighbors. We have all these people. There are many, but what the writer of this proverb is saying, but there is one friend. One true friend, they aren't many. And how many of us have a lot of acquaintances in our life? We do business with them, we do life with them, that there's a lot of things that we do, and we know a lot of people. But friends are few. There aren't many of them. What this proverb's saying is that good, true friendships are rare compared to all of our other relationships that we have. If you go to Proverbs 27, verse 9, it says, oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Again, a friend, one who is sweet. Friendship is like sweet food. How many of you like sweet food? Yeah, it's like friendship. Here's what's interesting about this. When this was written, there wasn't something called sugar. I know. How'd they do it? If the food that you chose to eat was sweet, that was your sweetness. But you didn't add sugar like we add sugar to make all things sweet. And so what the proverb is saying here is that we can sweeten anything we want here today in our world, but the only way to have something sweet was to find the food that was already sweet. In other words, friendship, according to this proverb, requires a foundation, an affinity, a common goal, a common love, a common vision that can be created between two people. And that's really the only way that then friendship can be discovered. Both C.S. Lewis and another writer, Ralph Waldo Emerson, have written great essays, I think, on friendship. Emerson says, friendship doesn't ask, do you love me? Do you care about me? Will you stick by me? As much as friendship asks, whoa, you see the same truth? Whoa, you're passionate about the same thing that I'm passionate about? Lewis says the typical expression of opening friendship would be something like, what? You too? I thought nobody else but myself. And he says that's the beginning of a good friendship. Lovers are always talking about love, how much they love each other. A good friend hardly talks about how great friendship is. What makes a great friend isn't, will you be my friend? Will you still be my friend? Are we friends forever? No, a good friendship is built on you too. You think that matters too? You love that too? This is what creates great friendships. This is why Lewis says, that is why those pathetic people who simply want friends can never make any. Lewis could have been a little kinder when he said that. He says this, he says, the very condition of having friends is that we should want something else besides friends. Where the truthful answer to the question is, do you see the same truth, would be, I see nothing and I don't care about the truth. I only want a friend. No friendship can arise out of that, though affection, of course, may. There would be nothing for the friendship to be about, and friendship must be about something, even if it were only an enthusiasm for dominoes or white mice. I don't know. Those who have nothing can share nothing. Those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travelers. The uniqueness of friendship is it's built on commonality. And so then I think true, real, and authentic friendship has to be discovered. Once we discover friendship, We have to build a foundation on that friendship. And I think Proverbs gives us at least a couple, four to be specific, great tasks that help us create great friendships. And I see them just as marks of true friendship. What are they? They're consistent, considerate, candid, and counsel. Those are the four that I have. What do I mean by consistency? Well, look again. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves when? At all times. At all times. This doesn't mean we spend all of our time together. It just means that that friend is loyal and that friend loves you. Proverbs 25:17 says, let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. So we can't spend all of our time with our friend. Otherwise, they're going to get sick and tired of us and not want us to be around. Does that make sense? Some of you don't have great friendships because you're like a leech. And you hook on and you don't let go. You want to have great friendships, sometimes you need to go home. Does that make sense? I'm trying to say this gentle and kindly, and it's a struggle, right? But then again, if we go back to verse 17 of chapter 17, what does it mean to be a friend who loves at all times? It means good times. It means bad times. It means ordinary times. It means routine times. It means being available. Remember, a friend doesn't let you go to ruin. Proverbs 18:24 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin. And some of us have a lot of acquaintances. And we know a lot of people. And we have a lot of different associations with these people. And most of the people in our lives tolerate us. And the reason they tolerate us is because we're useful to them. And I need us to hear this. Because most of the people we know, our companions and our acquaintances and our coworkers and our teammates, why do we know these people? Because they're useful to us and we're useful to them. And the test is when things start falling apart and the world around you starts crumbling, who's there? And these acquaintances are the people who say, hey, call me if you need anything, and walk away saying, man, I hope they don't call me. But you know what a friend does? A friend shows up. When the world around you seems to be falling apart, look who's there. These are the people who are likely your friends. A friend says, I'm not going to let you get to the bottom. Even if it costs me everything, I am going to keep you from ruin. And so I think consideration is the second mark of true friendship. The first is consistency. The second is consideration. Proverbs 27:14 says, whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. You've got that friend. Where you're like, sometimes I wish you just would be quiet. Right? Proverbs 26:18-19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was just joking. Whoa. Clearly, these proverbs are talking about someone emotionally disconnected. Do I know enough to know what joke might actually hurt you? Might actually put you in a tailspin? Do I know whether or not you're a morning person or not? And am I willing to show that consideration? And so I think consideration is a part of building a great friendship. This is an emotional disconnect. If I can be happy when you're sad, we must not be friends. And I think real and true friendship makes emotional connection, makes us emotionally vulnerable, which many of us aren't great at doing. That's why we actually have people in our lives and something catastrophic is happening and we decide to tell nobody. Because we fail to be emotionally vulnerable. And what happens if we continue down that path? We're going to be there by ourselves at the end, wondering why I don't have any friends. And I wish, as a pastor, I could tell you it never happens, but it happens all the time. Our pride gets in the way. We're so proud, we don't want to put anybody else out, so I'm not going to tell you what's going on in my life. We make excuses, oh, well, they're too busy, they got too many things going on, I don't want to burden them. You're not being considerate, you're being prideful. And what's going to happen if we continue down that path? You're going to be at the end and you're going to look around and you're going to wonder why you don't have any friends. And it happens all the time. In friendship, we give the gift of emotional connected vulnerability. We have to. A true friend can't be singing when your heart is loaded. They can't go on doing life when your life is collapsing around you. This is why we can't have too many friends. We can't survive. A friend creates an emotional connection that is a gift that makes them emotionally aware of what's going on around us and in our lives. They don't use this for a means to an end. They are committed to our flourishing because they can't flourish unless we're flourishing too. That's what friendship does. Does that make sense? And so I think the third mark of a friendship is this. It's the ability to be candid. Proverbs 27, 5 and 6 says, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy." And think about these phrases. A wound from a friend is a metaphor for a word that our friend needs to hear. And when I say it, it's going to be painful to hear. And they have to hear it. They have to hear it. If we're too afraid to say it, then we're actually not friends. We're not friends. I've gotten in trouble with this one. I thought we were friends. I said hard things. Realized we weren't friends, and vice versa. Hidden love is another metaphor, though, isn't it? Saying that this is a person who thinks you're loving by hiding the truth. Well, I'm just not going to say anything. It would hurt them too bad. So I just don't want to say anything. I love the person too much to confront them. And what the proverb says is that hiding is as bad as kisses from an enemy. That's what Proverbs is telling us. Proverbs 29:5 says, "A man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet." Instead of telling our friends what's wrong, we're actually setting them up for a very disastrous life, as much as if we were putting their feet into a trap. Why? Because we are their friends. They are going to make decisions based on the false reality that I help them live in. And if we don't have friends who will be real with us, keeping intention, being considerate and candid, then we've got to find some friends who will be real with us. And this is what makes friendship so hard. It does. We have a tendency to either shut our mouths because we care and we think it'll be too hurtful, or we don't say anything because we actually don't care. And this is what makes friendships hard. This is what makes friendships painful, because we have to be consistent. We have to be considerate. We have to be candid at all times. And I think the fourth mark is this. It's counsel. Proverbs 27:9 says, "Oil and perfume make the heart gold, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel." I like the adjective there, earnest. It means from the heart. It means coming straight from the heart. Counsel means to tell a secret. So it would read, to tell your friend a secret. It means to confide in somebody. This is another unique aspect of friendship that we don't have in a bunch of other relationships. This is why I think we have so many therapists, because we don't have friends. And this isn't a therapist. This isn't even a pastor. It's not a professional counselor. This is friendship. We will not be the person God intended us to be without it. Proverbs 27:17 says this, and I love this verse because it gets, well, I'll give you my commentary in a second. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. I've been to many men's breakfasts in my lifetime where there's doilies on the table. And this is the verse we use. Now, I didn't live in the times when you had a blacksmith. Most of you didn't either. But I'm sure you've been to the fair, or you've been to a farmer's market, or you've been to an amusement park or something where you've seen iron on iron, right? Is it doily and pretty and flowery? No. It's messy. Sparks fly. It's dirty. It's a hot job. Anybody I've ever seen sharpening something on iron, they're sweating and it's hot and there are sparks flying and there is dust everywhere. And yet we read this verse and we think, oh, how cute. If we have a friendship where there is sharing from the heart, where there is transparency, where we let the other person see the bottom of our soul, but it's not reciprocated, it's emotional exploitation. It means somebody is using somebody, and it shouldn't always be reassuring and sweet or challenging and clashing. If we read all these proverbs, we get a picture of an ideal friend. A friend is somebody who gives us the truth, even though the friend experiences pain in doing so. A friend who cleaves to us is faithful, so we will never be ruined. A friend is somebody who is emotionally connected to us, who gets into our life, who we allow because we're vulnerable. This is the perfect friend. And my imagination, as I was preparing this, there's probably two postures for us today. Or two emotions. The first emotion is this. Maybe you're feeling and longing and desiring and wish you had a friend like I've just described. We live in a culture where our friends are taken away from us before we actually can ever develop them. People move, life things happen, things change. And you're wishing you had a friend like I've been describing. Or maybe you're feeling a little crushed because when you measure yourself against this ideal friendship, you realize that you're not that kind of friend. And I think one of the reasons that we don't have friends is because we're actually not the friend we should be. And the reason we don't have people like this is because we're not like this. A friend lets us in. And a friend never lets us down. A friend is transparent and real and open and vulnerable and emotionally connected. And how easy is it then for you and me to be this kind of friend? And I think if I'm honest, it's hard sometimes. It's hard sometimes because we don't have the time. How can I be a friend like this? Where do I find strength to be a friend like this? And you're at church, so you know where I'm going to go. His name is Jesus. He is. I think the answer for us is found in John chapter 14 through 17. If you were to sit and read through this, Jesus is eagerly, and he is so desperately trying to get his disciples to understand what he is about to do. That he is about to surrender his life on the cross. And in the middle of this, in John chapter 15, verses 12 through 15, it says this, "This is my commandment," and I know you've heard this if you've been around Mountain View much, "that you love one another as I have loved you." And Jesus goes on to say, he says, "Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends." And then he twists. This is so fascinating because he turns the table, and this is what Jesus says. He says, "You are my friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. In other words, that me too, that commonality, that desire, that really I want to join you in this effort. That's what brings us together. And this is what Jesus says. He says, I'm no longer calling you servants. He shifts. He redefines his relationship with the disciples. For the servant does not know what his master is doing. But this is what Jesus says. I call you friend. For that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Jesus was letting them in. And what Jesus was doing is he was loving them. He was preparing to lay down his own life for his disciples. And suddenly the entire history of the entire universe can be understood through friendship. From the beginning with Adam and Eve, God has longed for and desired a relationship with us. And even now, God wants to walk with us through our life. God has made us for friendship and friendship with him and with each other. And Jesus declared that he is our ultimate friend. He loves at all times. He was born for adversity. He wants to cleave to us so that we will not be ruined. His wounds are wounds of love. He lets us in. He longs for an emotional connection with us. His arms are opened wide and nailed open for good. How much more open can Jesus get for you? And he's the perfect friend because Jesus, he will not let us down. He will not let us down. With Jesus as my ultimate friend, he trusts me. He loves me so much. I don't have to fear rejection. He sets me free to be a great friend for others. Make him the friend of your heart, and you will find that you have a friend. The friend your heart needs. And then, go be the kind of friend he is. I still believe some of us are sitting here and you're probably thinking, man, I wish I had a friend like that. You do. And his name is Jesus. You let him in. And I promise your life can change. You look to Jesus as the model friend, you will become friends to many. You will. And so I want to carry that thought into our communion time. We have a couple communion tables set up. And maybe today, while you're eating the bread and you're drinking the juice, you can simply just be reminded of the phrase I just shared. Jesus is so open to you that they actually nailed his hands wide open because he wants to let you in. So what's holding you back? What's keeping you from him? What's keeping you from making him your best friend? And maybe you have, then what's keeping you from being a friend like Jesus is? And so when you eat the bread and you drink the juice, maybe you don't feel chosen today and picked today, and maybe you feel a little lonely today. Jesus is saying, I'm your friend, and you can trust me, and I won't let you down. We're going to get real. Trust me. So carry that thought as we enter our communion time. There's a table back here and one over here. You're free to go. I remember several years ago, there was a new song that was introduced about being a friend of God, and
I had just become lead pastor, and I started getting these notes about how the song was not right. It was wrong. And I was in a major, I was so confused. I didn't know what to think about it, right? I'm like, I don't understand. And so I went on this journey just to read. And I got to tell you, when I read Ephesians and I read about how we've been adopted and I'm an heir to the Father, which means I'm like a brother to Jesus, there is something special that happens to my soul when I think about being adopted into God's family. But then when I read John 15, and I read that he basically says, you're not just my servants, you're not just my family, but you are my friend. And there is something remarkable that happens in my soul when I think about being the friend of Jesus. Every day, I get to journey with him. Every single day. He's there in the great moments. He's there in the hard times. He's there when I'm weeping. He's there when I'm rejoicing. He's there when there's plenty and when there's not. He's consistent. He's considerate. He's not pushy. If you've spent any time with Jesus, you know that he typically is inviting us to join him. He's real. He's real. He'll poke the soft spots. And he's really great counsel. He lived a life, and we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that teach us a lot about how to navigate this life. He says things like, don't worry about tomorrow. Don't stress out about it. You can't add to your life by worrying. Don't do it. He says things like, come to me if you're heavy and you're burdened, and I'm going to give you rest. He says things like this, that he's going to come back because he's gone to prepare a place. And if he's gone to prepare a place, then he's going to come back and he's going to take us to that place with him. And it'll be a place where there is peace forever. He tells us, don't drift, stay the course, don't lose sight of what's really important. And so I'm going to pray for us, and my prayer is simply this, that we will continue to make Jesus our best friend, and that we will be a friend like Jesus to our friends. So God, thanks for today. Thank you for Solomon's wisdom, who seemed to have had everything in this life. He had more wives than one man could ever desire. He had more cattle. He had more riches and wealth. He had everything. And yet he gives us some really poignant, practical wisdom about how to have great friends and be a great friend. And God, I am so thankful that I can look towards your son, Jesus, who is my friend, the best friend anyone can have. He is faithful, he is true, he is present, he is there, he is wise, he is loving, he is compassionate, he is kind. And so God, for some of us, we need to work at making Jesus our friend. And then with our friendship with Jesus, we need to go and we need to duplicate that and emulate that in our friendships with each other. And so today I just pray that the words I've spoken, that God, through the power of the Holy Spirit, they would write into our hearts, and that we would look to you as our perfect and best and most worthy friend. And that we can be a friend like you. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand. Let's praise.